In Greece, a city was hardly a city without a bizarre foundation myth. Greeks in cities everywhere told tall stories about their past. Deep roots among the Greeks were a sure source of prestige. Logic was rarely a feature of their foundation myths. The ultimate, of course, was for an entire region to claim never to have been conquered, but always to have preserved its customs and its liberty from invaders. With a smugness that other Greeks found wearisome in the extreme, the Athenians pointed to the sacrosanct quality of their borders, of how no Heraclid or Dorian had ever succeeded in forcing them, and of how, like the wheat and the barley that grew in the Attic fields, the vines, the olives, and the figs, they were earth-born, soil-sprung, autochthonous. Here was a mystery profounder by far than those claimed by other Greeks when they traced fabulous bloodlines for themselves and boasted of divine descent. Indeed, it would have been blasphemy for an Athenian to pretend to any such thing. After all, the goddess whom they worshipped as their protector and from whom they took their name was Athena, the grey-eyed warrior, mistress of the arts, daughter of wisdom, and a virgin. Not for her, sublime and enigmatic, the indignities of childbirth. No man would ever possess her. The nearest anyone had come to achieving that was when her brother Hephaestus, the crippled blacksmith of the gods, whose talents of craftsmanship were as limitless as his bandy legs were weak, had been so overcome with desire for his sister that he had hobbled after her, sweaty and soot-stained, and sought to take her in his arms. Athena, with icy contempt, had brushed him aside, but not before Hephaestus, shuddering with excitement, had ejaculated all over her thigh. Wiping the mess off with a tangle of wool, the goddess had dropped it, still sodden, down onto Attica, where the semen had moistened the womb of Mother Earth. From this fertilizing of the grain-giving fields had been born a child with the coiled tail of a snake. Athena, adopting him, had named him Erechtheus. She had settled him on the Acropolis in her own wealthy temple, and there, to this day, with each revolving of the year, the sons of Athens offer him bulls and rams. So it was that all the people of Attica, not just the Athenians, could look upon the Acropolis and be reminded of the soil from which they had sprung, of the inheritance which they shared, and of the loyalty to their homeland which they owed. The result was a regional identity unlike any other in Greece. That Athens stood dominant as the only city in the whole of Attica was, in the eyes of other Greeks, both startling and aberrant. Only Sparta, of the Greek powers, controlled a broader swathe of territory than Athens did. But hers had been won and was held at the point of a sword. The Athenians had never attempted anything remotely as energetic. Out in the fields and groves of Attica, a man might easily live less as a citizen than as a serf, as a sharecropper, paying a sixth of all he earned to a distant landlord. The landlords themselves lived well apart from the common run. Such was the desire for exclusivity of some aristocratic clans that the Athenian nobility well might have awarded themselves the title eupatrids, or well-bred. There was no other aristocracy in Greece quite so snobbishly stuck in the past.